Let's go, Rider Nation. I'm ready. I'm ready.
Welcome to the Piffles Podcast, your Saskatchewan Rough Riders fan podcast. And this week, we are sad to report that Steve is not with us.
I'm just glad he is such a friend to Chris Trevler that he would go to Winnipeg to console him after that preseason loss.
He was so distraught after Trevler had a pretty decent preseason game.
Well, for Chris Trevler.
For Chris Trevler, yes, of course. But he wanted to see him the whole game. He really did. And because he didn't, Steve was like, I can't do the show. I just can't do the show.
So like, tell him I'm sick or something is exactly what he said. But
he actually texted me and said, please make sure you talk about Chris Trevler tonight. And I think we will in Steve's honor. But we're going to talk a lot of Saskatchewan Rough Riders here. Give us a follow on X at Piffles Pod. I'm at Real Alex D.
And as always, I do not need nor want your pity follows at Greg on Sports.
Facebook as well. And of course, the website, piffles podcast.com. Thanks for giving us a listen wherever you find your favorite podcast, watching on YouTube, or if you're watching on Sastel Max TV on demand, we appreciate that. Piffles Podcast, of course, is brought to you by Dairy Queen on Elphinstone Street and Sass Drive in Regina. Greg, you mentioned it before, went there, tried the peach cobbler.
It's good.
Blizzard. Legit. That is
next level. Next level.
Blizzard. And my dogs may have had a little bit of it as well, too. Big fans. Big fans.
I didn't share any with my dog. I just ate
it. It was gone before you got home.
It was gone before I even offered it.
Do want to give thought here before we do get started. Want to kind of dedicate this show going forward right now to Darren Detition of TSN. Of course, passed away last week at the age of 57. Had a 2-year battle with cancer. Noted Rider fan. He never shied away from showing that. And for anybody who ever met him, talked to him, he was as genuine of a person as you would ever find, and big time Rider fans. So Dutchie, this is for you. We'll miss you here in Rider Nation.
Big man in the business, big man in person, big personality.
Like, and arms even bigger than that.
Oh, and rest in peace, Dutchie. Like,
yeah.
Rider Nation. It's going to be a big hole in Rider Nation as it is in you could tell by how respected he was, because from every corner of the sports media in Canada was giving Dutchie his props. That tells you how much he meant to this industry as a man and as a person. So
the absolute best. So this one's for you, Dutchie. Let's get to our opening kickoff. All right, we're going to talk Riders Bombers preseason. Riders winning 25-12. I think it was 25-12. If I looked at CFL.ca and looked, maybe it was 13-12 or 19-12. They never had it figured out. It took them hours after the game to get it right.
And yet again, the stats are wrong. In order, like, for the CFL, for the information to get out there, the fact that they didn't know Ojo got a touchdown, unless you actually physically watch the game, I guess that's one way to make sure you have people watching the game so they can keep their own stats. It's at this point, it's beyond a joke. It's sad and pathetic that Genius Sports hasn't been able to figure this out.
I'm not going to get into my rant about them, but it's embarrassing is what it is. I know it's preseason and you try and, pardon me, work out the kinks of things in preseason. This is a basic thing that the CFL year after year continues to screw up. And it's just, it's beyond ridiculous now. And the stat package they sent to the media following the game, again, had the wrong score in it. The official league stat package. So, good one, guys. But anyway, it was 25-12. Riders pretty much dominated that entire game from start to finish. And
hey, don't feel too good about yourself, though. It was starters against rookies. Us Saskatchewan fan are looking for a way to get our hopes up, I guess.
This was our Grey Cup. The parade route. I saw Stamps fans and plenty of Bomber fans asking where the parade route is. I'm like, well, it's the Green Mile. It's literally written in stone, basically. It's there.
We know exactly where it's going to go and where it's going to end.
Yeah. But it was normally I don't care about a win in preseason, but I think you can tell Coach Mace really wanted a win in this one just to, as you saw him post game, set the tone, build it. We came here to win, and that's what you guys did. So the compete level, to me, let's start there. I haven't seen a team compete like that in a preseason game and really have that kind of energy in a long, long time. And if that's what they're going to do in a preseason game, imagine what they're going to do when it matters for real in just a few weeks.
Like, was there some blown coverages? Yes, obviously by that Winnipeg touchdown. But the fact remains is the guys were all running at 100%. It doesn't matter if they were a vet or if they were a guy that just showed up in Saskatchewan like a week and a half ago. These guys were ready to compete. And the fact that Hixon took that first touchdown ball and took it right to Coach Mace shows you the respect this team has for that man.
Yep. That was some, cause my seats are in the end zone far on the other end zone. And after Hixon got in, you saw him just kind of run off to the sideline. I was like, okay, who's he looking to high five or, you know, shoulder bump into? And he bypassed everybody and just kept looking for where Corey Mace was. So the level of respect that they have, they're going to give it all for this team this year. I truly, truly believe that. And yeah, they're going to lose some games, but if that compete level that we saw in a preseason game is there all season long, that alone is going to make up a couple wins just off that. So I like seeing that.
The fact that his biggest takeaway of the game, we still took too many penalties. We won, fine, but we still took too many penalties. We took too many big plays off the board, and we need to rein that in. And that was his message to the team as by his post-game speech that he gave that the Riders put online. Like, he went immediately, yeah, we won, but we got to clean this up. And that shows you his mindset that he's going to carry with this team.
I actually really like the post game, just when he had his son Micah in his arms while he addressed the team. It really shows what's important. And if your head coach is doing that, that's just going to trickle down. And guys see that, they respect that. And that's someone that they're going to go to war with. And I think that's truly what we're going to get out of this Rough Riders team. You mentioned the vets flying around. How about right off the bat, KSB and Sean Bain in mid-season form? The catch by Schaefer Baker there.
Where he like repositioned himself in the air just so he could get to it.
Yeah, that's a big boy catch right there. That was,
and you can tell he's no longer like he's past all of his injuries. He looks like he's at 100%.
My wife commented and said, yeah, he's got some arms on him. And yeah, that guy's gonna, I mean, you don't make those kind of catches without having putting in the work, right? So he's gonna catch a lot of contested passes this year, and I'm looking forward to seeing a full healthy KSB and Sean Bain just zooming by everybody. If he had that second gear, that Kenton Keith extra gear, he would have just dusted.
You can
all
tell he was winded down. you can tell us early in this season, I'm like, he just ran out of gas. That's that was
So do you want to go with offense first? Do you want to go with defense? Where do you want to go here, Greg?
Let's start an offense. We already mentioned Bain and KSB. Easy one to stand out, Joe.
Yeah.
He's looking like he's going to be a steal if he can keep this up. And I love your comment, get him a real number.
because you're wearing number 75. No,
receiver 75 is usually a scrub
like that.
Yeah, like, don't get me wrong, these guys are usually scrubs or gone before the end of preseason. But yeah, I think he's sticking around because he's a big dude too. Like, he is a tall, thick man. Like, he is going to cause problems if he can get on that rotation really quickly this year.
Well, and from what I've read out of camp is he's still not the best route runner. So if they can clean up some of that stuff, I don't think he'll make the active roster when the final roster is made. I think he's going to be a practice roster guy. But if you can keep him and develop him and have him behind, you know, Picton, KSB, MLS, Braden Linnaeus, and be the next guy up, I think that's a good career start for him anyway, just with kind of how raw he is. But yeah, that touchdown, that was one heck of a catch, the athleticism, and then just turned on the Jets. And I kind of like the celebrating before he got into the end zone, only because it was a preseason game. If it was a regular season game, I'd be like, dude, just get in the end zone first. But preseason, whatever. I think he's going to be a standout. You know what I really liked? Running the ball when it was to Bertrand Houdon, it was a toss play. I haven't seen a toss play by the Riders in years. Not that that has to become an every down, you know, thing, but if they can sprinkle that in and just catch the defensive ends crashing in, they're going to get some big gains on that.
You don't see a lot of tosses anymore.
Yeah. I don't know what it is.
In general, you don't see
it. So I think if Mark Mueller can throw some wrinkles like that into the offensive playbook, it's going to be a really exciting offense to watch. And I mean, Trevor Harris, outside of his first pass, which was
into the first row,
he looked very good. Shea Patterson looked really, really good. And I don't think we were surprised to see Mason Fine come in second. I think we were all surprised to see Mason Fine leave after just handing the ball off three times. But turns out, I guess he tweaked something. So Corey Mace pulled him from there. Just get him ready, make sure he's ready for this upcoming game against Edmonton on Saturday. But that's one of those things. Like, he's in a fight for the number two position. And if you can't play, the other guy performs pretty well, that doesn't bode well.
No, that's one of those keep your phone next to you, but chances are you're getting cut. It seemed weird. Like if their plan was just to have him hand it off, that tells you where he is right now. I'm actually surprised how long they left Pipkin in there. Like, I thought, like, they left him in there a long time. Oh, did he ever? Especially considering he's supposed to be the short yardage guy, but they're having him slinging it. It was like, have Patterson out there. Like, you already know what Pipkin can do. Like, give more to Cohn, give more to Patterson. But Patterson and Cohn got quite a bit as it was. I just can't believe they left Pipkin out there that long.
Well, and going for Jack Cohn, of course, 6 of 8 for 40 yards. He missed a pass down the sidelines, which if you probably give him that throw again, he probably makes. But I don't know. Seemed okay to me.
Seemed like a rookie. Still trying to figure stuff out. The guys are a little bigger, a little faster. Yeah, he played at Notre Dame, but it's a little different when you're playing against men, so to speak. So he looked okay. I think a practice roster spot is probably in his future, if anything. But I guess we'll see what happens this coming week, how much more he gets, and maybe he can figure it out.
Running the ball, Frankie Hixon, it looked like he had he had some really nice cuts, showed a little bit of a burst as well, too. I think he's going to be – I thought he was maybe a candidate to be on the bubble to make this team, but I think he's going to be AJ Ouellette's backup. I think just the different contrast that they have in running styles – and hopefully they actually give Hixon the ball this year, it should work out pretty well.
I think you could definitely do a thunder and lightning with him and AJ, definitely. AJ is going to be more of that pounding back while you can do that quick stuff with Hixon. My only caveat to that is Rakovic, with the way he runs and his size. Yes, he's listed as a fullback, but he's more of a halfback than anything. So I think he could definitely make that running back race a little interesting with Hixon.
And I'm really intrigued to see what they do in the second game here, just with that, because it's not often you see an American fullback make a roster in the CFL. Again, fullback, right? But how many running backs can they keep on the roster? Can they keep Bertrand Hudon on as well as Hixon and Rakovic? I doubt it. One of them probably has to sit. So it'll be interesting to see how that roster shakes out with the running backs. And receivers, again, I'm not worried about the starters. It's a little surprised we didn't get to see more plays drawn up to, you know, like Geronimo Allison.
It seemed like Cohn was trying to get a ball to him, or Patterson was trying to get balls to him. It just wasn't working. I saw a few go his way.
Liked what I saw out of Keyshawn Johnson. Again, not that Keyshawn Johnson, but this Keyshawn Johnson. Only had two catches for 17 yards, but had a big one called back and looked pretty explosive. Like he could be a guy to work with. So not worried too much about the receivers right now. It'll be interesting to see who does make the final roster. But flipping over to the other side, the defense. I liked that they learned how to tackle.
Yes.
It seemed like tackling was actually put as an importance by this coaching staff, wrapping your guy up and bringing him down, not just going for the big hit, because there wasn't too many missed tackles. And generally speaking, they were bringing them down right when they got to them. So I was really, really impressed by that. If that's going to be something that's going to be, you know, to me, I've been saying this for years, it's a pro football problem. It's not just a Rider problem. This is everywhere. Everybody goes for that big hit so you can have that, you know, nice YouTube clip on your highlights. Cool. But if he bounces off you, we've seen that happen with Chris Stiefler. And yes, we're going to call him Stiefler. It's Steve's favorite player. We have to incorporate that.
It's out of love.
How many times in the Banjo Bowl alone over the last year, has Stiefler just bounced off guys and pinballed his way for 20, 30 yards?
Like Janarian Grant last year on that kick return. How many blown tackles? Because no one went for a tackle. They all went for the big hits. Like I said, there's the Nick Marshall school of tackling for a reason, because some guys knew how to tackle and they hung out with Nick Marshall and all of a sudden they forgot. Because Nick Marshall was notorious for going for that big hit when he wasn't big enough to go for that big hit.
Defense, Rodney Clemens was everywhere in the first quarter, and he actually got to sack Chris Stiefler. So he actually wins a six-pack of Churchill Brewing Company from Steve. I wonder if he'll DM Steve back about that. That'd be kind of cool.
That'd be amazing. Actually, I liked what Holton Hill did. I saw him out there quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Our boy Habakkuk Baldonado got himself a sack.
And on that sack, too, that was the quarterback was trying to run away. He just grabbed him by the back and just pulled him. He was like, nope, you're not getting away. And then just wrapped him up right away. That was impressive to me.
That was like Uncle Phil catching Jazz in the building. And just, nope. But.
Diego Fagot, his interception, that was such a great interception, because he was twisting around going the other way to make that play that he did, was just showed off his athleticism. I hope they can find a way to have him make the roster, because I think this guy can be a really good one in the CFL. And the guys seemed to kind of rally around him. He seemed like he was kind of flying around everywhere. And the other linebacker that got an interception, Sakobi McLean. I mean, that one was right to him, but it seems like they have some pretty decent depth there behind Jameer Thurman. And of course, with him not really playing, these guys got the chance. And I'm not sure how much room there is for you know, American linebackers on the roster, but.
Well, all the linebackers, even Malik Straker made a few plays. Like the linebacking core played very mm-hmm. strong. I also got to give a shout out to Stephen Smith of the Regina yes. Junior program. Got a nice hit on special teams there as well. So
yeah,
it's good to see him out there. So
overall, I think it was a pretty good game. It seemed like it was something we can really look forward to, and that's. Just this is going to be a team that's going to compete. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was again second, third, fourth stringers, guys that aren't going to make the CFL. But still, it was encouraging to watch. I was going to ask you who your star of the game is, and I'm just going to say it was Frankie Hickson for me, just based off going to find Corey Mace for the reasons we talked about before, is they love this guy. They're going to play hard for him. And I think this year it's going to be someone different every game that steps up.
I agree. Hickson definitely seemed he came into this season with a different gear. I don't know if it's just because there's a little more competition at that spot and he wants to make a difference between him and AJ Ouellette. But yeah, no, Hickson, I agree with you. He was definitely the start of the game for me as well.
And Ajojo, of course, which we mentioned
right off the top. That dance alone.
Outside of the game, the in-game stadium experience, yeah, it wasn't the best crowd in terms of how many people showed up.
Way more than I thought. Like, they didn't announce attendance, and I've seen some really low numbers out there.
It wasn't as low as people are suggesting.
No, it had to be just the eyeball test. It had to be anywhere between a third to half. I'd say it's anywhere between 10 and 15. Maybe even as high as 17, but I don't think it was as low as I've seen out there with 5,000 people. There's no way.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't that bad. But the crowd seemed into it, and I like the new games that they had. I love the Stats is Right that they pulled off. So for those that didn't see it, it's
here's a hint. It's Price is Right rules. Here, go last because by the time you get to the end. Someone's going to be yelling out the right stat.
Yeah, so they had how many career rushing yards did George Reed have? And so the first person, I think, said 13,000. Second person said, what was it, 6 or 7,000?
Yeah, they went 11.
So, it was 16,148. Is that right? Something like that. But somebody guessed 16,000, so that was pretty cool to have them pretty close. So,
well, because she definitely got from the crowd because she's looking this way. She's like 16,
and then they had the game with Gaynor in the pipes. He had to figure out which pipe he went down, and that was a playoff of Super Mario Brothers.
I'm assuming that's their new version of the Cup Shuffle.
Yes, but that was pretty cool. Steve actually made a really good point of how come they didn't use Mario Alford in there.
That would make the most sense.
But
I'm certain though, under CBA rules, he would have to be compensated somehow.
Probably. But also, if you're a kid watching that, you have no idea who Mario Alford is. But you see Gaynor, right? So.
And then they had the new one with the cards too. They had the playing cards where they had to find the ace. And my favorite about that one is everyone can lose in typical, because it's a Casino Regina one, and in typical casino style, everyone can lose. So there's three players, and the fourth player is always going to be Gaynor. And out of four cards, everyone picks a card, and it just happened to be Gaynor picked himself, which is the winning card, and no one won.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. I like that.
It was very funny. Because he picked last. It's even funnier.
But overall, I think the experience in-game, just it was a good day to be out there at Mosaic Stadium enjoying football. And I was just happy to be back out there.
It's always great to get back to that stadium. Like, I've had bad days at that stadium, mainly because of the way that the team played. But it's usually very hopeful when it first starts and I can't complain. And then the game starts and then Dickey's clapping on the sidelines and my heart breaks, but you know, we won't have that this year. It'll be fine.
I think we're at the under of our quota of how many times we're going to mention Chris Streveler, Steve. So there's another one right there. And you know, Steve's listening to us too. You know, he's listening.
Steve, this is for you.
And also, thank you for being such a big supporter and fan of the CFL and myself personally.
Had to do at least once.
I was waiting for it. I knew it was coming at some point. So Riders winning 25-12 over Winnipeg. If you liked watching them beat the Bombers, I just suggest you join us on the Piffles podcast Banjo Bowl bus trip, because they're going to do that again in September. Not many seats left on that. So get in on that right away. If you are thinking you want to watch the Riders beat the Bombers yet again this year after Labor Day and the first game that they meet as well too, you want to see them go for the sweep, including the preseason, come with us to the Banjo Bowl. Send us an email, piffles podcast@gmail.com, and we'd love to have you on board. Again, not many seats left. We'll get you.
And when we sell this bus out, it's done, because we are not running two buses.
No, that's way too much work for Steve to have to put in.
Exactly, because you know me and you aren't doing anything.
No, I just show up. He literally does everything. I pick a couple prizes out, and that's about it.
I do the poster, and then I'm like, okay, Steve Stein.
Done.
Yep.
Couple roster moves for the Riders following the preseason game. Signed another receiver, Joe Robustelli. Big guy, 6'2", 220. Runs a really decent 40 as well, too. So he'll be around for a little bit anyway. I don't know if he'll get into the next game on Saturday here, but who knows? Maybe he does. But somebody to keep an eye on anyway. And then go ahead.
No, I'm just trying to figure out why they're testing out more receivers. That's all. It just seems like the ones that they, and like I said, I'm not in the film session, so I don't know what they're looking at, but all the receivers seem to do a good job for the amount that had balls thrown at them. Like Dante Myers, we didn't even talk about him. He had a decent game too.
Oh yeah. That big long return as well too. Jarrett Stearns had a
Jarrett really Stearns like. I was a little worried there when he lost his spot in the on the offense and they put him at his kick return. I'm like, oh, that's not good for him. But dude, if you're going to contribute, you're going to contribute, and there's a spot for him right there.
So maybe Mario Alford has to be looking over his shoulder a little bit with those guys showing out a little bit on special teams. Going back to the receivers though, I'm actually kind of curious about this, because I saw some people saying just what you said. Well, why another receiver? Everything seems kind of set there, or we have guys. I started thinking about it. If you have a guy on your neg list, you kind of just bring him up whenever you can, right? If he's available, hey, we have a contract for you. If he wants to hold off, you know, wait a year or whatever, that's fine. But if he says yes, I don't think you wait on it. Cause if you say, oh, hold on, we don't need a receiver now, maybe next year, maybe he's like, nah, screw you guys. So I don't know. Maybe that has something to do with it.
It just seems really late in the entire camp process to evaluate a guy that's, you're right, is not going to be ready for the game. So I guess, you know, run a few drills and hopefully you can show out, because unless you're going to have him on the roster game one.
J.O. did learn from Chris Jones, so maybe there's more guys just waiting. Pre-practice squads, is that what it was called? Every team has
pre-practice squad.
Yeah, every team has guys sticking around. Like, come on, let's be real here. Corresponding move, Riders cut Nick Nelson, defensive back, to make room for this receiver. So one of the defensive backs gone, which thins it out a little bit, and just overall,
I don't think he was even in the depth chart. I looked after he was cut today, and I didn't see him even. I don't think he cracked the depth chart.
No, but there's a few guys that didn't actually play from the looks of it anyway, or didn't play very long in the defensive backfield. This second game is going to be, you know, the real testing point to see where our secondary is, and who's starting. So. we'll see how that goes. I guess when the depth chart comes out on Friday, which apparently the Bombers for the first time in a few years actually put out a depth chart for the preseason. Normally they never do, which I get it. It doesn't really mean much, but when you're a fan or, you know, media trying to evaluate who's, you know, where.
Well, especially when you have so many guys, especially the home team always has a ton of guys, and the road team usually travels lighter. There's still a lot of guys you need to know. Like that Ryder depth chart was a mess. Like they had like five guys on some positions.
You know what I liked about their depth chart is they actually had the line on defense
for strong side, weak side.
For strong side, weak side. I was like, why is there a weird line? I'm like, oh, and then they put boundary side. I was like, okay, there we go. That's good.
Yeah, I've never seen that before. I was like, that's interesting. I like that.
Still looks a little bit weird, but I like the reason why. All right, well, that's the opening kickoff presented by Kathy Festian of Roy LePage Regina Realty. Jumping to our Churchill Brewing Company odds and end zones. Last time we chatted, we talked about Chad Kelly and the whole situation. Of course, the day after, he releases a statement, basically saying all the right things. He's going to take a step back, stay away from the team, and focus on, you know, his counseling and all the courses he needs to take to get back to the CFL. Anyway, whatever. I think that was the first good PR move that the Argos have actually had in this whole situation, was just like, Chad, put this statement out on your socials and then just
go away.
Go away. Yeah. Still probably do stuff with the team behind the scenes, which you're allowed to do. But when cameras are out, you're not out there. You're not out on the field anywhere. You're not at practice. You're not there for preseason games. You can be in the meeting rooms and all that kind of stuff, but finally some decent PR based off that. But will he do the right things? He said the right things in his statement. Will he do the right things?
Oh, it's always easier to say the things you're going to do, especially if you probably didn't write the statement yourself.
There are some big words in there that I don't think he knows.
He got the dictionary out, if it did, or that word of the day calendar he got for Christmas from Uncle Jim is definitely helping him out. But once again, words, statements, we've seen them a million times. And I have reserved the right to be proven wrong on this. But like I said, this is all a bunch of words. The proof is going to be when he comes back, if he can rehabilitate, if he comes back, if he can rehabilitate his character, his stature, whatever in the league, that so-called Chad Kelly star power that the league was going to put a rocket on his butt to put him as the franchise guy of both the biggest market and the league as the most outstanding player is now worthless. It is going to be quite the reclamation project to get him back to where the league thought he should be. And I don't think he's actually, I honestly don't think he'll ever get there. I think, unfortunately, will he be a good quarterback if he can do the right things? Yes. Will he still have that star power that the league wanted? Not anymore.
Well, I think if you're the league, you kind of have to stop pushing that as well to find somebody else that you can market a little bit and just take pressure off that way, I guess. Whatever. We'll see what happens. I'm a Denver Broncos fan. So I knew all about Chad Kelly, going into the NFL, and he blew that chance with Denver. And I was like, last year I ate the crow because I said he wasn't going to be the guy and didn't think he had his head in the game. They were 16-2 with him at the helm, record setting team.
And he didn't play a lot of those games.
Well, he didn't have to.
Yeah, well, exactly. That team was that well built. That 16-2, everyone's like, whoa, 16. He didn't play a lot of those games. Like, that roster was built very, very well and coached very, very well, too. Not all that's on Chad Kelly. Yes, was he a big part of it? Sure. But 16-2 is not on Chad Kelly.
Well, I mean, I'm back to where I was a couple of years ago, where I just don't think that this is going to end well for him. I'm surprised it lasted as long as it did. Longer than Johnny Manziel, I guess.
Oh, Johnny. I had such high hopes for you.
Oh, he had... No, I'm not going to make the joke. Never mind.
You were just high.
Yeah, exactly. That was the joke. But the Argos making quarterback news, bringing in Nick Arbuckle makes sense when your all your, what, three, four quarterbacks on your roster besides Chad Kelly have a combined, like, 60, 70 passes in the CFL.
Yeah, whatever Cameron Dukes has. With the Garfield movie coming out right away, like, it's just perfect synergy that the league is looking for in that market. Bringing in Garfield's owner.
It's a move that makes sense, though. You have a vet that can come in and maintain an offense, maybe not light it up by any means, but when you have a good roster, like the Argos still have a good roster. To me, it just comes down to, is Cameron Dukes the guy? He looked good last year, but can he take that next step now being the clear number one, at least for the first nine games with the Argos? And you have a good backup behind him, a veteran that you can learn from.
Okay, but here's the question. What's would have been a better signing, Nick Arbuckle or Taylor Cornelius?
Ooh. I don't know.
Because you know Taylor's already got paid. You could probably save a few dollars by going after Taylor Cornelius. I don't think, I honestly think, and I can't believe I'm saying this, the upside to Taylor Cornelius is higher than Nick Arbuckle. The only thing that might sway you bringing in Nick Arbuckle, he already kind of knows the roster because he was there, what, 2 years ago?
Yeah.
So he kind of knows the playbook. That might be your only saving grace, but by ability alone, I like Taylor Cornelius more than Nick Arbuckle.
I'm sure Cornelius will pop up somewhere. Injuries happen. He'll probably be the next guy that gets called.
How haven't Lucky Whitehead or Jake Winicky signed with anyone yet? Or Janarian Grant?
Janarian Grant. Yeah. I don't know.
Like, I am so confused by some of these guys that aren't signed yet. Like, is their asking price too high, or is just everyone moved on? It just makes no sense.
Probably a combination of both, I guess. Maybe. Other business opportunities. I don't know. But otherwise, around the CFL, honestly, outside of just training camps, not a lot of things making headlines, which over the last couple of weeks, it's all been Chad Kelly. So for the league to not have to issue any statements or anything is probably a good thing, where they can focus on football. And
I don't know. Chris Jones did a Chris Jones thing today.
Yeah, the signing that they had.
Well, not the signing. And to be fair, it was
a supplemental draft.
It's a supplemental draft pick, and he only had to give up an eighth because no one else did it. But this guy hasn't played. Like, he graduated, supposedly quit on Alabama, or if you talk to his dad, he left school so he could take care of his sick grandma. Fine, whatever. Transfers to Colorado. They suspend him without playing a game. So he didn't play at Alabama, didn't play at Colorado, went to some JUCO school, didn't play a game there, took a year off football, went to the NCAA, whatever that is. I think that's like less than like tier four college football. Had a decent season. And Chris Jones said, you know, screw it, bring him in. But he only had to give up an eighth, which,
I mean,
this could either be the smartest move ever if this guy can pan out, because he was a five-star prospect in high school. Or this is going to be, who cares? It's an eighth. Like, there's no way this is a bad move. Like,
no.
Who cares? He gave up an eighth. Doesn't matter.
It's a very on-brand move from Chris Jones in the terms of, you know, bringing in a guy who hasn't played in 3+ years, whatever it was. And watch this guy be just a complete anchor on the D-line for years to come.
Well, like I said, this could be like the most brilliant, like, 4D chess move ever made, or it's nothing, because who cares? It's an eighth round pick. it's not going to change anything because these guys usually don't make the roster anyway. There's no way this is a bad move. And he's like I said, he's the only one to actually attempt to get this guy. It is like, yeah, Chris Jones never change.
All right. Well, let's speaking of Chris Jones, Riders are playing in Edmonton this upcoming Saturday at 2 PM for their preseason finale. The second game. It's the first game for Edmonton, of course. Really cool that the Riders are going to put on a watch party at Mosaic Stadium. So they'll stream the game on the Maxtron with CFL Plus. So we'll have the play-by-play.
Oh, we're going to get Dave. We're going to get Chad, Morley, and Dave.
Well, I would assume that maybe they'll have the Rider feed on it.
No, because I believe it's the home feed because the Bomber fans were complaining that Dave and Luke were too happy about preseason touchdowns.
Let me tell you something about Bomber fans. Mike, some guy that has me blocked that I've never interacted with
me before, blocked too,
searches me out and says that my life is so uneventful that I got excited about a preseason game. Well, one, Mike, you're not wrong. My life is pretty uneventful. I don't do anything. I go to work. I walk my dogs. I might see my wife if we're not both not working, and we have this podcast. That's my life. So, yes, you're right. Uneventful. But I'm also not the guy sitting at home searching out a guy I have blocked just to see what he said about my team losing. That's just a guy bitter about his team losing a preseason game. It's a guy who takes sports way too seriously. It's like soft, soft.
Well, and that's just what surprises me the most of it. Like, he legit went out of his way to see what you said. And I have similar people that just don't follow me, but sure, always have a comment on stuff I say, which I guess that's part of social media. If that's how you want to spend your time, so be it. But yeah, Bomber fans, they've gotten so soft and so fragile. Don't get me wrong. There's good ones out there. Squeak, Ted, like, love those guys. But, man, there's some Bomber fans that just, like, what are you thinking? Like, you guys were bad for so long, and then the heel turn came once you guys got good, and now you're just unbearable.
The best part is he has me blocked, but still follows the Piffles podcast account itself.
Well, because he knows where to go for his Rider news.
Yeah, exactly. Whatever. Anyway, but what I'm... back to the point about CFL Plus, they can still stream the game on the big screen, but since they're going to be sending Dave Thomas and Luke Mullender out there anyway for their radio broadcast.
Oh, I guess, yeah, they could sync up. They could sync up 620, which actually they do all the time for the in-house broadcast in the Harvard Lounge as it is.
Yeah.
So I think that makes sense. Yeah.
So I think that's what they're probably going to end up doing at Mosaic Stadium. So because, you know, we were at that game, I didn't get to listen to Dave Thomas and his first broadcast. From all accounts, from what I was reading, people seem to enjoy it, which is good.
He had a few hiccups first game in. Who does? It's gonna be typical.
80 guys on a roster.
That dude's like, well, one of the Bomber fans complains, who's the announcer that called Castillo Garcia? Like, come on, like, sorry,
made a mistake.
He made a whatever mistake. It happens.
Have you seen who TSN has put out sometimes? There's more than enough mistakes. It's fine. Anyway, watch party at Mosaic Stadium. So hopefully I'll get my first chance to listen to Dave Thomas do a Rider game. So hopefully it's a nice weather day, because it'd be good to get out to the stadium again and hopefully have a couple of the concessions open and just enjoy a game at the stadium.
If it's anything like how they showed the Raptors game a few years ago, they'll have basically the north. They'll have the south end zone basically blocked off. North, you can walk around the north, and there'll be a couple concessions open, and yeah, watch the game. It's a great idea. I love it.
If the stadium was available for it, they should be doing that for every away game, weather permitting, of course.
Weather permitting. Yeah.
But if there's no Rams or or, you know, Thunder playing there, or if there's no, you know, whatever else high school stuff going on, then I think that's one thing they should be doing a lot of. So we'll see how it goes. This will be kind of their test event, I guess, for preseason for that. But I'll be going. So if you happen to be going out there, you see me, come say hi.
And if I'm there, just don't talk to me.
Yeah. And definitely do not follow you. Social media wise, yeah. Follow him.
Don't follow me either. That's just weird.
Creepily follow him. Yeah. What do you think we're going to see from the starters? Because Trevor Harris only had the two drives, and it sounds like the plan was to only give him the first drive in the first game. But Mace liked the way that they moved the ball, so they gave him one more drive, and they were able to, you know, drive the ball down.
Starters are probably going to get a few more cracks at it. I wouldn't be surprised if it's one quarter. Unfortunately, with the fact that they're not playing in week three of preseason, do you push that into the second quarter? I don't know. You got to watch your injuries, because you're going to have guys on the other side trying to make this roster, and you never know what they might do. So keep your starters healthy and safe, but make sure they get the rust off, because like we alluded to, Harris's first ball was in row one. So need to dial that sight in a little bit.
I'm really curious to see how they attack this, especially now with Mason Fine basically not playing in the first preseason game. How much is it going to be Fine versus Patterson? Because I don't think they'll give Pipkin a lot of reps in this one. Cone probably not either, because they need to figure out who is the number two guy. And right now, I think it's Patterson.
It's going to depend on Fine's health. Like, if Fine for some reason is still nicked up and can't go, Cone's got to be ready to take quite a few snaps that he's not to do something here. I think ideally what you want to do is you go quarter and a half maybe with Harris and the ones, and then you have Fine and Patterson fight it out the rest of the way, and maybe put a mop up duty to Cone just to get so he gets a little more live fire. But I think, yeah, bulk of the game, at least a third of the game each, has to go to Fine and Patterson if Fine's good to go.
So what's still out there for available spots? We didn't even talk about the offensive line in the last game. Left tackle with Trevor Reed getting the start. I don't want to say he's locked in, but I'm pretty sure he's about as locked in as you can be without.
There's three things I noticed about the offensive line. Sevier's not a center.
No, do not ever. If we are at that point where Sevier is our center, that's when I'm going to have big time worries.
Because that's I guarantee you in a game, they move Ferland or Blake to center.
Yep. Absolutely.
And they don't let Sevier anywhere near there. So that's what I noticed. God, I love Hardrick's leadership. What a difference he makes.
And he's so big.
And that's probably why he's so noticeable. Walking up and down that sideline, like high-fiving, hugging everybody, like just getting the crowd riled up. Like, he's out there pumping up the line. Like, Hardrick's leadership on that line is going to be a godsend this year. And I'm glad we brought him back. He was a player that they never should have walked away from. But
wow, he does that. He pumps everybody up, but then he's a mean SOB on the field. Yeah. Like, he is tough to play against, and that's exactly what you want.
And Tucker, I rent don't buy, but I don't think you're making this roster, because the few times where I did notice you, it's not for good things.
Well, he took a penalty after, I think it was that third down stop that Toronto or that Winnipeg had. I mean, you're probably able to keep one more American on the practice roster, but who knows? Maybe one of the five suspended guys will show up.
No, they still got Hubbard, is it, also around too? But yeah, Tucker did not. The few things I noticed of him weren't great. So if you're standing out at doing not good in a preseason game one, I don't like your longevity on this roster.
Receivers, is there still some stuff to do there?
I have no idea what they're going to do. Like we just kind of talked about when they brought in Robust Ellie. Like, I don't know what they're doing. Like, Allison's got NFL pedigree. You think they would have worked him in more? They got Stearns returning kicks because they have another guy playing slot. You already know you're locked in with KSB and Bain and Emelis. Picton's always going to look good where he's at for the role he plays. I don't know what they're going to do because you want to see everyone advance, but you also want to see some new blood in there to start bringing up the backside of it. So I'm glad I'm not have to make cuts in that receiver room right now.
There's going to be some good players not make this team. The talent that Jeremy O'Day and company have brought in is there. Like, they've brought in some very, very solid talent. So it's a good problem to have. And then the DBs is the other one that I guess we'll be watching a little bit closer again in this game. I think Rodney Clemens played himself onto the starting roster.
Easily.
They're big on CJ Colden. Amari Henderson should be, I don't know if he's going to play this game or not, but he'll be on the roster at some point anyway.
Deontay Williams looked like what he looked like for a while last season. And linebackers too. Like I said, like every American linebacker they brought in showed out somehow in that preseason game. You're right. There's going to be some really good players that are going to get cut this year.
I wonder how many paper cuts are going to go around as they offer practice roster spots to everybody. Oh no, you cut your finger on the six game.
I could see that happening, especially with some of those older veterans like Philip Blake might get a paper cut that might take him to Labor Day.
Well, with the way that Sevier was playing, I don't think we have to worry about Blake not.
Well, no, it's not. I'm thinking like one of those younger guys coming up might be. Maybe it's Caesar that gets the paper cut, then you have like Zer or Fry or Florin as that sixth.
I wish I would have saw a little bit more from Florin and Fry, actually. And that was just my fault for not paying close enough attention to that. Noah Zer didn't look like he was, I don't want to say comfortable, but didn't look like he was ready to take that next step. So, but hopefully Florin, Zach Fry, Daniel Johnson as well too, this year's draft pick in the fifth round. If they can, keep a couple of these guys around, they got to get the young blood going in on that O-line.
Well, and that's my concern. If they're only going three Canadians and you have to six-man Blake or Sevier, that's not good for your future.
So I'll be looking forward to O-line a little bit more in this one. I'll be paying a little bit more attention. Honestly, for me, it's easier to do while watching on TV than at the game. Yeah. Cause I'm watching so many different things, trying to watch so many different things at the game. So at least I can focus a little bit more on the O-line, seeing how they do. But yeah, there's still some open spots on this roster. I don't think we saw some people jump up and get jobs in the first game. I don't think we really saw too many people play themselves off the roster. So, but there's a lot of room to make. If you have a really good game here against Edmonton, you can find yourself on the roster. So, what are you looking for out of this game? Do you care if they win?
Well, I don't want to see them lose, if that makes sense. I want the vets to come out healthy. I would like a win. And it doesn't really matter anymore now that Edmonton's streak is over. So we can't really just lean on that anymore. But yeah, no, I want the vets to come out. Like, I want our starting roster healthy. So they're ready to go game one. I want some answers. I want guys to step up and actually take spots, like claim them as their own.
Yes.
They can't just play to make the team. They got to claim to go, no, no, you're starting me. And that's the way they got to go into it. Even if they are in mop up duty, like you go, no, no, you're making a mistake by not putting me with the ones. That's my spot. Like, well, show you're supposed to be in this league.
Terrell Davis got his start in the NFL, was on special teams. He just blew a guy up on a kickoff. Yep. And he was a late round, or maybe he was undrafted. I don't remember, but he was a late round pick anyway. And they weren't going to put him, probably not going to put him on the roster. And they noticed him after that play. Mm-hmm. So if we can see somebody like that this year for the Riders, just like you said, just go up and take the spot, get the eyes on you. If they can do that, then, and that goes to the compete level, which we started talking about right off the top of the show. I want to see that compete level. I want to see it the whole way through again. And I don't want to see guys get complacent. I don't want to see vets get complacent in their spot. Yeah, we know KSB is going to have a starting spot. We know Sean Boehner is going to have a starting spot, but I don't want to see them go and still attack it like they don't have one. And just not put in the motions just because it's, you know, the second preseason game. And that goes to just culture in general around the Riders. And that's where I think we're at. Last year we saw guys putting in the motion. Mm-hmm. I don't see that happening this year. So if we see that kind of stuff, you know, preseason game one and preseason game two, I'm going to be quite a happy person going into the regular season, because these guys are going to give absolutely everything they have.
And I think that's the biggest thing Rider fans want. After the last two seasons where we've seen guys pack it in after Labor Day, we want to see a competitive team. Like, they don't need to win every game. We just want them to be in every game.
Well, just the give a damn factor. Yep. It's got to be there.
But if they can go 18-0, that'd be great too.
that'd be nice. And win the Grey Cup.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, you can't just go 18-0.
Don't win 18 games and not win the championship.
Yeah, if you're going to win 18.
Yeah, that's not fun for anybody.
If you're going to win 18 games, then win like 16 in the regular season and then your two playoff games. That's how you should win 18 games.
Anyway.
Yeah. Just the give a damn factor. That's what I want to see. But it's weird too, because you have this, and usually after the second preseason game, that's it. That's the end of training camp. Cuts come in usually that night or the night after. The Riders still have 4 days of practice after that, which they're going to finish in Regina. So they come back to Regina on the Sunday. They fly back to Saskatoon after the game and then come back to Regina on the Sunday. Then they have Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday for practices. So it's a little bit weird. So just having that first preseason game one, and then being done in week two when there's a third week after. So even guys that we think might play themselves onto the roster in this game, if they just put in the motions in the last few days of training camp, maybe that gets them out the door.
Well, you would think that the coaching staff knows after that second game, 98%
generally. Yeah.
You would think like, and that's why that last 4 days of practice are going to be probably the weirdest training camp a lot of these guys have ever had. Because at that point you're basically installing your ones.
Yeah. Like, and I'm curious to see if they're going to treat that as, you know, just an extra week of getting ready for the regular season, or if it's still, you know, evaluation time. That'll be interesting to see how Coach Mace handles that.
I think at that point you take that as a head start to get your to get your game plan installed. Like, I don't know why you would wait just to, and I'm not saying Coach Mason would go through the motions, but essentially you're going through the motions of a training camp when you have a good idea of what your team is. Start getting your game plan going for game one against Edmonton.
Yeah, that'll be fun to watch, actually. Hoping to get to a couple of those practices when they're back in Regina. So, but football is back. The Riders look good on the field. And it was just nice to get out to the stadium. I always loved the home preseason game just for that reason, just to get back out to the stadium and actually just not really worry about a game in terms of the outcome. So it's just kind of nice to just kind of, it's like the last week of the regular season in the NFL as a degenerate fantasy football player. It's the one week of the year where you can just relax and just watch your team play just for the sake of them playing and not worry about stats.
Wins and losses. The only thing you need to worry about is how much stuff has gone up. But we'll complain about that another time.
$12.50 for a beer, craft beer. Ugh. My God.
That's for a small one.
Yeah. See, they had those big, like, double cans for $18.
Yeah.
$18. Gross. Just brutal. I got the pierogies, though.
Yeah, I saw the guy at the pierogi stand now.
They suckered me into that. Amy wanted a drink, so we got her a Pepsi, and then I was looking up, and I was like, oh, yeah, pierogies do sound good right now. They got me.
They got
so you. I can't complain too much about it.
Side note, I got to admit, it was pretty cool that they had that swearing-in ceremony on the field.
Yeah.
For all those new Canadians.
That's pretty awesome. Cool. Hopefully they can. And did you notice that they had 13 of them?
I know. I was going to say that is so on the nose with 13.
Yes. Yeah. Very cool. I'm sure that's not the last time we'll see that. So that was a pretty cool experience, I bet, for them.
Yeah. And they had the crowd join in with reaffirming their commitment to mm-hmm. Canada. So very cool.
Just great to be back at Mosaic Stadium. Nice. Nice weather day as well, too. It wasn't too bad. So football's back. We did it. We made it.
Through the wilderness, people.
Well, that'll do it for us here this week on the Piffles Podcast. Of course, the show is brought to you by our great friends at Dairy Queen on Elphinstone Street and Sass Drive in Regina. Special thanks, of course, to Kathy Festian of Royal LePage Regina Realty and Churchill Brewing Company for their support making the show possible. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. This is Tyler Gilbert with Ghost Behind Your Mind.